So I wasn't going to speak about this, but I don't know. I prepared a different class. Maybe. I prepared a whole different class. And over Hanukkah, when my mother had us all over, somebody came over to me, non-blood relative, and he's young. So when you're young, you know everything. When you're young, you know everything. So he came over to me and he said, "So why don't you write a letter?" I said, "About what?" He goes, about the rabbis who wrote the letter. So by the way, at this point, I had no idea what he was talking about. I think it was that day it had hit the papers. So he said, "No, they wrote a letter that you can't rent to Arabs." So I said, "So what do you want me to do?" He goes, "I want you to write a letter against them." I said, "If I write a letter against them, who's going to care?" So he goes, "No." I said, "Have you a better question? What should I say in my letter?" He goes, "Say that their position is absolutely against Judaism." That their position is against Judaism. So I said, "But I think that their position is defensible." He goes, "You agree?" I said, "I didn't say that I agree. I said that I think that their position is defensible." Now, obviously, subtleties was lost. subtleties was lost over here. So I said I wasn't going to write anything. And I certainly didn't think I was going to teach about it.
It's all your fault.
It is your fault.
Now, I was in the chat about this.
Oh, it's terrible. That means that they spoke too much about it. Okay, but let's... Okay, so good. So I will... Okay, good. So I'll be wasting your time then.
No.
Anyway, yesterday I saw somebody had sent me a nice article that Rabbi Lichtenstein had written, which is both in Hebrew and in English, if anybody's interested in this. And then I said, you know what, maybe I'll just explain Rabbi Lichtenstein's article. And then by the time I finished yesterday, I apparently have a whole different class. So let's begin. All that I'm going to try to do today is one very, very simple thing. And that is, even though I do believe that what these rabbis signed this letter, and those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, saying that there's an absolute prohibition, and again, if I can take... And I've never seen the letter. I don't know who signed it. So I did try to get my hands on one yesterday, which I didn't. But just judging from what he responds to... Yes. Okay, so just according to what he responds to, it seems to be that they said that one is absolutely prohibited. Whoever rents or sells to a non-Jew should be ostracized, excommunicated, and this is a prohibition of Torah law, and so on and so forth. So all that I want to try to do is something very, very simple, and that is to raise the question that if one goes through Jewish sources, could one have possibly come to a different conclusion? Okay, that's the entire question. Or is this a case that is just, you know, what can you do? This is what Judaism says. And anybody who says something different is basically guilty of apologetics. Now, what I'm not dealing with is politically what's the wise thing to do. What I'm also not dealing with is, in terms of public relations, what's the wise way of communicating one's position. I'm also fairly convinced that there is a very deep cultural gap between the people who are signing such pronouncements and the general Israeli population. And when I say that, one of the people who's been leading this whole march is somebody who I know, and I saying that you can't rent. Okay, if you really push me and need to know, if you're writing a biography of me or whatever, you need all the details, I'll share, but I don't think it's necessary, that I asked somebody who's very close to him, and I said, because really what I was thinking is, okay, even if he wants to say these things, there's a smarter way of doing it. He needs a PR person. And I said, you know, has he thought about the response? He goes, oh no, quite the opposite. He loves the response, which means... all the reasons that some of you, the best term I can think of, that this has caused a lot of hand-wringing, right, is, no, I don't think that upsets him. I think that quite the opposite. It's the sort of approach is this is undistilled Torah true Judaism, and this is something which people need to hear. And they're...
Did you say he's Arab?
You have the original. What?
Is that okay?
No, no, not at all. Not at all. Anyway, so I think there really is a culture. It's also interesting. I read something last night written by Rabbi Dr. Professor Jeffrey Wolf, who came to the conclusion that most of the people who signed it were people who were against college education, and therefore he thinks that there's a lack of sophistication, which I have to write to him and call him and tell him that I think is absolutely wrong, what he's saying. It's not a question of lack of sophistication. It's a cultural issue, which means he seems to be the position, which I think he's somewhat sympathetic politically to the position. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but what he's saying is that they're just failing as far as PR goes. No, this is something, because we know that when you're an extremist, you end up getting a lot of people excited, and you get people against you, but you get people to support you. Look, I mean, if I could only get people to excommunicate me, then I can sell a lot more books, because that would be a lot more exciting. So I know that this has been a very poor career move on my part by not making all kinds of silly pronouncements. So having said all that, the question over here, again, is not in terms of politics what's the right thing. It's not in terms of PR what's the right way of saying it. It's a very simple question. In terms of Jewish law, was there another voice that could have been heard over here or could have been expressed? By the way, Rav Lichtenstein is very clear in his article where he thinks that they are wrong in terms of Jewish law. And he shows various sources that there will be some overlap here in what he said and other things that he did not get into. So let's begin. The basic topic is, as you see, the title, and that's Lo Tichanem. That's the law, that's the prohibition. Lo Tichanem. In Dvarim Perek Zayin it says, Ki yevi'acha Hashem alokecha El ha'aretz asher tavash shama lirishta. Okay, if we're out of sources, Shuli, you may have to make another, like, two copies. No, no, that's something else. Sorry. Ki yevi'acha Hashem alokecha el ha'aretz asher tavash shama lirishta v'nashal goyim rabim mipanecha hachiti v'hagirgashi v'hemori v'aknani v'aprizi v'achivi v'yivusi. What are those? How many people did I just? You sure? You counted? Don't count. The next word says Shiv'a Goyim.
No, but because you've been mentioned the seven, so here you've got all seven.
You got all seven. Yeah. Here you got all seven. Or Shiv'a Goyim, Rabim Vatsumim Mimecha, Unetanam Hashem Alkechel Afanecha, Vihikitam Hacharim Tacharim Otam, Lo Tichrot Lehem Brit, Velo Tichanim. So basically, wallop them, chase them away. Do not make a covenant with them, and lo tichanem. Now, the only problem here is, what does the word lo tichanem mean? What's the root of the word tichanem? Tichanem. So Rashi gives two interpretations in source number two. Rashi gives two interpretations. One, lo tichanem, lo titein lahem chen. What's chen? What is chen? You say grace, it sounds like a Christian thing. Don't be nice to them.
No, not nice. I think it means not to find something nice in them.
Lo titein lahem chen. But he gives an example, which is what you're going towards. Asur lo adam lomar kama na'e goy ze. Okay, you're now allowed to say, how nice is this guy? Which, by the way, is somewhat difficult, because you have various cases in the Gemara where Tanayim do that. So hold on. Well, let's see. Dover Acher, Al Titein Lahem Chaniyah Ba'aretz. Don't give them a parking space. If you see somebody non-Jewish wants a parking, no. What does it mean, Al Titein Lahem Chaniyah? To settle amongst you. So over here, Rashi gives two interpretations, which itself interesting. Why are there two? Are these two different possibilities? Are these mutually exclusive? The Gemara ends up in source number three with really saying that the way that the word is written, I can actually come to the conclusion of multiple applications of this. It doesn't have to only mean one. It could be that these two interpretations are not mutually exclusive, and the verse itself could mean both. Now, one question, which is an open question over here, Lo Tichanem, who is it referring to? So I think that this is fairly easy, but I just want to make it a drop more complicated, because if I go back to the first source and I read Pasuk Gimel now, v'lo tichaten bam bitcha lo titen livno uvito lo tikach livnecha, which means this is a prohibition against intermarriage. So now, the only reason I'm introducing this is because I think there may be somewhat of a tension. What is the tension? Is this verse about lo tichanem, is this speaking about all non-Jews? Is it speaking about idolaters? Or is it speaking about exclusively the seven nations? Because if I say it's just the seven nations, because that's the context over here, and undoubtedly that's the context, so then maybe there's not a prohibition in terms of intermarriage with anybody other than the seven nations. So I just now raised three possibilities. What were my three possibilities? One, it's exclusive to the seven nations. Two, it's anyone who's an idolater. And three, it's talking about any non-Jew. It doesn't make a difference to idolater or not. And maybe that last verse would push us in that direction. That's really what we need to be keeping in mind over here as we go through the various sources and the various Rishonim. The Gemara...
What exactly is the... I get the gist of what Tichanim is, but what is the exact...
That's the problem, is the translation. That's why I didn't want to give you English over here, because that would lead it one way or the other. The problem is, what is the definition? We just now saw Rashi gave two possibilities. One is from the word chen, niceties, and the other is from the word, and by the way, when somebody is, a presidential pardon is called chanina, right? Over here, the second possibility is chania, is settling over here. So one is, does it mean you shouldn't be nice to non-Jews? Or does it mean that you shouldn't let them settle over here in the land? Those are two very different interpretations, even though, as I said, from the Gemara, they might not, in the final analysis, end up being mutually exclusive. The Mishnah says, this is important because this Gemara isn't found in Masechet Avodah Zarah. So what's the context of Avodah Zarah? Two-word answer? I have to give one-word answer. Avodah Zarah. Okay, good. So the Mishnah over here says, Ein mochrin lehem b'mechubar lekarka. You shouldn't sell to them anything which is connected to the ground, such as a tree. Avo mocher hu mishiyeh katzetz. If you cut it down, then you can give it. Rav Yehuda Omer Mocha Hu Almanatlik Kotz. You even give them something which, on condition that they're going to cut something, the wood that they're going to cut down. Menahani Mile. How do you know this? Rav Yosef Rav Chanina. Rav Yosef Rav Chanina says, "The Omer Kra Lo Techanem Lo Titein Lahim Chania Bikarka." So here, this interpretation of the Gemara was Rashi's second interpretation. Don't give them something which will be a settling or connectedness with the land. The Gemara that says, "Hai lo tchanein mi ba'ilei dehachi kamar rachmana." Is that really what this comes to teach us? Lo titein lehem chein. No, doesn't this mean that you shouldn't be nice? Im kein lemakor lo tichunam. Because if that's the case, the Torah should have said lo tichunam. My lo tichanein. And I don't care right now if you appreciate the diuk or you don't appreciate it. The Gemara is coming over here and saying there would have been a way to say don't be nice to them, and that would have been That would have been lo tichunam.
Grammatically.
So over here it says, no, what does it mean lo tichanim? Shma mina. I can conclude from this, tarte. Tarte in Aramaic means shnayim, both of them. I can conclude that both of them, that we can learn both of these things. So now, when you saw Rashi brought two interpretations, this may be that Rashi's exactly following the Gemara. He says, no, both these interpretations are valid. The Gemara then continues with various... applications of this. Maybe we'll go through it quickly. V'ik mi boi le dahachi amar rachman lo titein lehem matanot shel chinam imkein lemakor lo tichinam my lo tichanem shmamina kulhu taninami hachi lo tichanem lo titein lehem chaniya bekarka dover acher lo tichanem lo titein lehem chen dover acher lo tichanem lo titein lehem matanot chinam. So here's a third interpretation it's throwing in, is don't give them things for free. Let's say somebody gives you a bottle of non-kosher wine. So what do you do with it? Are you allowed to give it to your non-Jewish neighbor? I can absolutely assure you there will be poskim will say, absolutely not. Lo techanem, you can't give them presents for free. I'm not telling you that's the halacha right now. I just said that there are people who will say that. There are people who say all kinds of things. I'll get to maybe some of the more absurd ones. No, I can't quote them because that would really be bad. But you'll guess. Lo titein lematanot chinam. Utan chinam gufa tanaihi. That itself is a machloket. Titania. Lo tachlu kol nevela legera shebashrecha titnena. Hold it. It says, don't eat a nevela. So here's a case of non-kosher food in the Torah. And what did the Torah say you should do when you have non-kosher food?
Give it away.
right? Give it to the non-Jew. So a little difficult. Someone say, hold it. You can't give non-kosher food to a non-Jew when you just have a case in the Torah of this, right? So the Gemara is asking, Now the Torah says that. Either give it to a ger or sell it to a nachri. So therefore, what can I conclude? That you can give a present to a ger. What does a ger mean over here? A ger toshav. Somebody who accepts the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, but is not Jewish. Leger b'mechira minayin. How do you know you're allowed to sell it to a ger? Talmud lomer titnena. O mocher. No, we learn that it means both. La'ovid kachavim minatina minayin. How do you know you can give it to a ovid kachavim? Talmud lomer titnena v'achla o machor l'nachri. Nimsata omer echad ger v'echad ovid kachavim bein minatina bein mechira. But the Gemara over here is at this point is concluding that you can either sell it or give it to either one of them. Divri b'meir of Yehuda Omer Dovrim Kichtavan. No, it's not loosely translated. It's as it's written. Leger b'netina ul'ovid kochavim b'mechira. You give it to a ger toshav. That means that somebody who's a ger toshav, whatever that means right now, we're just giving the quick definition, somebody who accepts the Sheva Mitzvah b'nei Noach, that person you shouldn't sell things to. What should you do? You should give things to them. Why? Because you have a responsibility of taking care of them. They live under your jurisdiction. You have a responsibility for them. But if somebody's an idolater, that person you can sell it to. Shaper k'amar Rav Meir. The Gemara says, no, Rav Meir had a good point. Rav Yehuda, amalach isal t'dech k'amar Rav Meir, if you can follow Rav Meir, lichtov rachmana, titnen v'achla umchor. O lamali, why is the word O there? Or, shma mina l'dvarim k'chtavan hu da'ata. Therefore, it must be the way it's written. Rav Meir, ahu l'akdumi netina t'gele m'chir d'ov t'chavim. That comes to teach you that you should give precedence to give it to a ger before you sell it to a ovid k'chavim. Rav Yehuda, kevin t'ger atamitzave l'hachiyato, that when it comes to a ger, you're obligated to keep him alive. The Kna'ani, iyata mitzuva l'chiyato. When it comes to a Canaanite, you're not obligated. Lakdim lo tzarech kra, therefore it doesn't have to give precedence. Now one thing I find interesting in this Gemara, which itself I think you appreciate, we could have done it much slower and analyzed it much more, but one thing I do find interesting is the thing that maybe you noticed or you didn't notice, and what's that? It's the place over here of Canaanite at the end. It didn't have to use the word Canaanite. It could have just said, which means again, what was my question from the beginning? The general prohibition of Lotichanem, which is really why it brought into this whole issue over here, is it the seven nations specifically? Is it all idolaters? Or is it any non-Jew? Now, it's interesting over here that here we have this Gemara talking about non-Jews on the one hand, who are monotheists, right? They accept seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. And there it says, not only in that case is there no prohibition of lo tichaneim by a regular non-Jew who's a monotheist, rather, more than that, we have an obligation of taking care of them. Okay, so that's one thing that we see from this Gemara. When it comes to my other question, are we talking about all idolaters or just the seven nations? So I'm not going to build a whole case on that, but I find that language, the turn of language here, interesting, that the Gemara in its conclusion specifically noted Canaanite and didn't say Ovid Kochavim, which it easily could and should have. Why should have it said? Because the term over here in the Chumash was Nachri. So Nachri, I can say, is any Nachri, any non-Jew. Why specific Canaanite? So again, that at least is interesting, but we'll leave that as an observation.
Yeah.
So that's a very good question. Apparently, that's one of the issues that we need to get to. So apparently, that's one of the things that we'll need to get to. Let's continue. Second to last line. I even underlined it. It's even underlined, but only on my piece of paper. Okay? The Rambam, and this should not be a surprise to you at this point, in which laws will he discuss this? In the laws of? Avodat Kochavim. So again, we see perhaps a pattern over here. Rambam, Hilchot Avod Kochavim Perek Yud, Halacha Aleph, Ein Kotin Brit L'Sheva Amamin. You are not allowed to make a covenant with the seven nations. Where does he get that from? The Torah, good proof. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Why? He says, "Kidei shenasim em shalom v'naniach otam la'avod avod kochavim," because that would allow you to leave them there to worship idolatry. That's very interesting, because he seems to only be troubled with the seven nations for what particular reason, and that's why he's writing the law over here. And what's that particular reason? Avodah zarah, which means Just appreciate this. The Rambam could have written this law in what's called the laws of Melachim, the laws of kings. One of the things that kings needs to do is to capture the land of Israel, and he could have easily written this in the law of kings, that one of the things that the king needs to do is to obliterate the seven nations. Over here, he doesn't write it. He writes it instead by the law of Avodah Chachavim, and he gives a reason for it. What is the reason that he gives? The reason, right? Well, what's the reason for the Chumash, he's saying, this Tamei HaMitzvot? What's the reason that he gives? Is to get rid of Avodat Kochavim. Halacha Dalid, which... Good question. It's also interesting. It says you should not have compassion on them. Why? Because it says lo techanem, which is another application of this being nice to them. Halacha dalid. Af makom shetiru lahaskir lo lebedira hitiru, even when you're allowed to rent. This gets more to our case. Even when you're allowed to rent, b'nei shehu machnis l'tocho vod chavim. Why are you not allowed to rent a home to these people? Because of idolatry. Now, by the way, that's real interesting, because here you have this is the main source that they quoted. The main source is the Rambam. You're not allowed to rent. And what's the reason the Rambam gives for not renting? So now you may begin to suspect that perhaps they were not on as firm ground as they led you to believe. Af makom shehitiru lahaskir, lo lebedira hitiru. Even certain things, exactly, which means what the Gemara and the Rambam bring is that you can rent, let's say, a barn, you can rent something, a storage house. But it says don't bring a home. Why is a home different? It gives a reason that the home is different. What is it? Because in the home they'll bring an avodah zarah into the house. Aval maskir lahem batim laasotam otsar. What we've already seen, you don't sell them trees, but you can sell them something which is cut or will be cut. Why are you not allowed to sell to them? Which you see the Rambam also did like Rashi did, and what's that? He concludes both definitions of lo techanim. He again doesn't see it as mutually exclusive, and why not? Because the Gemara didn't see it as mutually exclusive. She'im lo yelehem karka yeshivatan yeshivat araihi, which is a very interesting political statement. What is the Rambam saying over here? If somebody does not have a piece of land, they are not connected to the land. So therefore, by renting or by selling or renting to them and giving them land, then you are connecting them to the land. If they're not connected to the land, then they are here temporarily. So therefore, excuse me? I think that his understanding over here is land to work. Again, you're dealing with an agricultural society. Renting somebody a room is still something which is temporary. But if somebody has land to work, then it's already a connection to the land. And by the way, this point is one which I think our neighbors understand very well. The Rambam says, "V'chein asur l'saper b'shivchan v'afil lomer kama ne oved kochavim zeh." So just in case you needed another reason to tell your husbands not to watch the Miss World contest or something like this, you have another reason now, is that a... Kal v'chomer, she yisaper b'shevach ma'asav, you're not allowed to say nice things about their actions, o she yichavev davar b'divrehim, or like any of their things, so the tshuva that I was referring to before is where Menashe Klein says you're not allowed to have a kosher Chinese restaurant. He says we should only have Jewish food. Now, again, I'd love to ask him exactly what is it. No, he goes, no, Jewish food, we know what Jewish food is. Jewish food, only Jewish food. And he goes, therefore, he doesn't like these Italian restaurants. He goes, how can you write Chinese restaurant, because it's Chinese food, it's from the Chinese, it's not Jewish food. You can only have Jewish restaurant, and he writes a whole tshuva about this, and he sees this as, I knew that, but he sees this as, no, it should be Moishi's food, But it could. No, but he's saying is that you're not allowed to like their things. Again, it's a very interesting statement. Again, one would assume that the Jews who were in Eastern Europe were somehow impacted by Eastern Europe diets, and Jews who were in other cultures were impacted by their diets. And this thing called Jewish food, I don't want to get into an argument. Rabbi Menashe Klein is a very great Talmud Chacham, but I found the tshuva somewhat amazing. Let's continue. And he says, because once you like their food or their things or things about them, you'll end up following their ways as well. Halacha vav. Ein kol hadvarim elo amrim ela bizman shegalu Yisrael lebein ovdei kochavim o sheyad akum takifa Yisrael bizman sheyad Yisrael takifa lehem asur lenin laniach ovdei kochavim beinenu. You're not allowed to allow idolaters to live among us. V'yafilu yoshev yeshivat arai, even a temporary abode, o over mimakom lemakom bischara, lo ya'avor ba'artzenu. You should even let them, traveling salesmen, come into our land. Ela ad shi kabolalov sheva mitzvot shenetzavu b'nei noach, shenemar, lo yeshvu ba'artzecha, afilu l'sha'a. They shouldn't settle in your land, and he understands it as even for a moment. Now, what did the Rambam just now do? I told you that there were three possibilities, right? One possibility is this applies to all non-Jews. So would he say all non-Jews? No. Which group would he definitely say can be over here? And therefore, Lo Tachanim doesn't apply. Who's that? No. Who does it not apply to? The opposite. It would be whoever accepts the Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach. Then it doesn't apply. Why? Because then Lo Tachanim. Who did we know from the Chumash that Lo Tachanim applies to? It applies to the seven nations. So what did the Rambam just now do? He just now expanded it from the seven nations to all idolaters. The person who takes him to task for this is the Ravad. If you see in bold letters there, Hasagat HaRavad, the Ravad argues with the Rambam, and he quotes, V'afilu shev yeshivat arai ovid kochavim malkom b'schora lo yavu b'artzenu. Omar Avraham, that's the Ravad, he writes, Zot lo matzanu v'lo shamanu ma'olam v'apasuk shehu mevi b'sheva umotu. He goes, the Rambam just pulled a fast one on us. He brought a verse which was applying to the seven nations and applied it to all idolaters. Now again, if the Rambam were here to defend himself, what would he say? His understanding of the problematic nature of the seven nations is for what reason? Is because they're idolaters. So therefore, in his mind, even though the verse says the seven nations, the reason is because they're idolaters. So therefore, he understands it's all idolaters. The Ravid says, I remain unconvinced. Why am I unconvinced? Because the verse is about the seven nations. If the Rambam had to defend himself, what would he likely say to the Ravid? An intermarriage is only with an idolater? If you have a nice Christian girl, that's okay? So again, why am I bringing intermarriage into it? Because it's the very next... But by the way, you can now come back and say to me, hold it, why am I bringing intermarriage into it? And if somebody's a ger toshav and accepts the seven mitzvot, for example, she's a nice Muslim girl, then you're allowed to marry with her. So this becomes a little problematic, and maybe the verse about intermarriage is not the prohibition of intermarriage. Maybe it's just the Torah giving you a scenario, saying this is what this could lead to, and this is problematic as its own. Now, if we were discussing the laws of intermarriage now, we would go much more into this, but we're not. What did the temporary? So what did the Rambam do? He said that this prohibition of lo techaneim is all idolaters. Okay, full stop. But by the way, the Rambam is also an interesting leniency. Who does it not apply to? Anybody who accepts the Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach. Okay, full stop.
Does that mean you can marry?
No. So I'm saying marriage must be something on the side. That's what I'm saying. That's another topic because it's not universally approved. Sheva Mitzvah would include belief in one God, belief in monotheism, belief that you're not allowed to break certain sexual laws, belief that one can't worship idolatry, and having a court system, Aver Min Hachai, we'll murder.
And then it's
okay. Let's continue. Look, the problem is all cultures believe that murder is not allowed. what they believe is that killing is allowed. The difference in murder and killing is that murder is an unjustified taking of life, and killing is a justified taking of life. What they may have is a very permissive attitude towards what's considered to be a justified taking of life. And really, it's not that they don't accept murder. Which means they accept that there's a prohibition against murder. Right. They accept that there's a prohibition against murder, but there's a difference of opinion in what's justified, what's not. I mean, let's continue. The verse that the Rambam just now quoted that the Ravid argued with him was Lo Yashvu Ba'artzecha, which the Ravid says only applies to the seven nations, because that's what the Torah said. Guess what? Rashi says the same thing in Source 5. Lo Yashvu Ba'artzecha. They shouldn't settle in your land. B'sheva Umot Ktiv. That verse is regarding the seven nations. So maybe. Let's continue. Tosfot in Source number 6 is talking about Lo Techanim, Lo Techaniya Bekarka. Which means the plain understanding of the matter. I mean, from the Gemara, it sounds like they're talking about all idolaters. And that's what seems from the later on discussion in the Gemara. And he goes, it's difficult, because why would somebody apply lo techanim to all idolaters, when the Gemara seems to be saying it's only talking about the seven nations? And that's a tension which already Tosfot is pointing at, which we have noticed along the way, to at least realize that we're on the right track, because the Rishonim are bothered by the same thing. He does suggest at the end, it could be the thing about the seven nations is because, then that's why the Torah used them, but it's just as an example. It says, Inami mishum da aduki bavod chacham tfei aval shar umot lo, because they are so... they were so involved in idolatry, which, by the way, would be the reason why they forfeited their rights to the land of Israel, and that's why we got to inherit the land. So I'm not going to go into every element of this Tosfot, but I just want you to see that he is troubled by this issue, who Lo Techanim applies to. The Ramban, and this will include, by the way, numerous of his students, writes, also commentary on the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, as did the Tosfot, V'od matzati Yerushalmi Tana, he quotes a Tosefta. In what case are you guilty of lo techanim, giving them presents? Begoy she'enu makiro. That's only by some guy that you don't know. O she'ya over mi makom lemakom. Or somebody who's traveling, a transitory person. Aval im haya ohavo, if there's a non-Jew that you like. O shcheino, or your neighbor. Harezim mutar, she'enu elo kimukaro lo. Because this is ready, there's a relationship over here. So this is very interesting. You can say, no, there should be more of a prohibition over there. The Ramban quotes Steph, says, no. Va'odam rinu dahani goyim lo adikim odazara kulehai. And also it seems to be that these non-Jews are not so connected to idolatry, which is something that Tosfot also said too, but I'm not going to explain that more than necessary now. Instead, what we're going to do is that we're going to go to perhaps the most radical of positions, which we did see last year when we were discussing saving lives of non-Jews on Shabbat, if you remember, or saving lives of non-Jews at all. The Meiri, who is the poster child for tolerance, Meiri lived in the 13th century. Meiri writes, and this is, again, the Iri on Avodah Zarah Daf Kaf, which is the same mission that we started with, Lo Techanim. Kfar yadata kama hichmira Torah l'harchik ovdei ha'ililim mi'artzenu. You know to what degree the Torah was concerned about distancing idolatry from our land, from our borders, umi benotenu, from our midst. Uva kama mekomot ha'ericha l'hazhirenu l'hitrachek bima'aseyim mikan amur Lo Techanim lo titen lemchem. And therefore, it says... And again, he's understanding this pretty much like the Rambam, because the verse he's applying to idolaters, and he sees the main thing as idolaters in our land. Right? This is very similar to what the Rambam had done. Skip down to the bottom. And he also quotes the same Tosefta that the Ramban did. Aval im hu shcheino o chaviro mutar shehu kim mochren lo ha kol shehu min ha'umot ha'gdurot bedarkei hadatot v'shamot be'elokut ein safek sha'af be'ein makiro mutar. You see, remember the Tosefta said, but if you know the non-Jew, then you're allowed to sell it to him, because it's lo techanim, you're not doing something for free. What's really the point of the Tosefta? If the guy is your neighbor and you give him a present, let me give you a different example. let's say you live in America and Christmas rolls around. Are you allowed to give your mailman a tip or some kind of present? No, here's a problem, because it could be that it's something having to do with idolatry. Let's say that you choose not, you give it to him on Hanukkah. And you say, listen, I keep Hanukkah, I'm giving you a Hanukkah present. Comes out to be the same thing. Now, are you allowed to do it? Now they give him something for free. So why are you doing it? Yeah, so that you get your mail, right? Why? Well, it's not for free, which means as far as you're concerned, there's a quid pro quo over here, which means...
You
sure?
Yes. So
you just want to be nice. They think they'll get better service. People who do things, they're doing this for better service.
Yeah, it's also in America, give gifts around Christmas time to their hair. I mean, like, people give to all sorts of people.
Right, but why are they doing it? In the back of their minds, they think that I get better service over here.
So if everybody else around is giving it,
maybe
okay.
For, if you live in an apartment building and you don't tip the mailman and everybody else tips the mailman, your mail will get lost. It's the elevator mail.
Stop it. I don't want her to lose her. I don't want her to lose her innocence. England, yeah, because England, everybody's nice and smiling. Okay. Okay. By the way, I never knew this, but I've witnessed this at Israeli weddings. And you tell me if you've ever seen this or know it, of people tipping the waiter. I know people that walk into a wedding, the waiter comes over, they slip the waiter between 20 to 50 shekel, and suddly they get... And they get... What min hug? Let me ask you a question. Do you think you're sitting at a different table? This guy just tipped him. There's extra food. Who's getting it? Okay, good. Okay, because I've seen this work. I'm not saying I've ever done this. I've been very amused. It works. It works. Absolutely. And not only do I know it works, one of my sons has worked as a waiter, and I said this to him. He goes, "Bivadai, bivadai." No. I said if there's extra. I'm not saying anything else. I'm sorry for all of you who've lost your innocence over here. You get a nice. Okay. Anyway, let's get back to our point over here. What we're really seeing from this Tosefta is if you know the guy and there's a relationship, there's a quid pro quo, so it's not chinam. It's not you giving something to someone for free, which means what emerged from the Tosefta, and I said what's important here is the Ramban and the Meiri and Tosfot are all quoting this. The Rashba, others quote this Tosefta. What's important there, it says, lo techanem means don't do something for chinam, for free. So therefore, again, you got this bottle of non-kosher wine, And there's some non-Jew you never saw before traveling through town here. Quick, I'm so glad I met my non-Jew here. Take it. He goes, that would be a problem. But if there's somebody who works for you, somebody that you know, that would not be the same problem, according to this Tosefta, at least. Okay?
That's for a worker. Fine. But if it's your neighbor, what are you getting from your neighbor?
Hopefully good neighborly relations.
But then you're saying that about Jews also.
That was said cynically.
That's not a non-Jewish thing. That's just a human nature thing.
Right. I didn't say that. Did I say that?
That's what I'm saying. But if you're giving a gift to your non-Jewish neighbor just because he's your neighbor, then why can't it just be that it's good to know?
So let's go on. But this is so nice. Anyway, let's go on. Now, did you catch what the Meiri said towards the end of his discussion here? He says, "Aval im hayash chenoa chaviro mutar shehu kimbochoran," because you know him. Lo hakol shehu min haumot. One second, right? Min haumot hagdorot b'derkei adatot. But the nations that have a standardized religion b'derkei adatot, v'shemodot be'elokut monotheists, ain safek she'af she'ain makiro mutar. Meiri just said that anyone who's a monotheist, you don't have to know them. There's a monotheist traveling through your town. You can give, there's no problem of lo techanem. What's he saying? The prohibition of lo techanem, of giving something for free, the prohibition is only by is only by idolaters. If someone's a monotheist, then the prohibition doesn't apply. Now I'm going to go back again. What did the Torah say the prohibition was about? It was about the seven nations, which means I could very easily say, no, that's only the seven nations exclusively. The fact that the Gemara seems to spread it to others is really the same sensitivity that the Rambam apparently picked up on, is that no, seven nations is an example and it's all idolaters. But still, what's the logical conclusion? If you ask the Meiri, does the Rambam agree with you, what would he say? He would say, absolutely the Rambam agrees with me. Because the problem over here is, as he says, is one of idolatry. So if somebody is not an idolater, so then the prohibition disappears. And over here, the Meiri is very, very clear, telling us that monotheists are not included within this. In case you thought it's a one-time thing, I think when I taught this last year, I brought you like six places in the Meiri that he says it. I will spare you of that, just bring you one other, because it's just about on the same page or so. Source 9. Ula inyan psak, which he's telling you, and this is law. He's talking about selling or renting houses to non-Jews. He says it's idolaters. It's only dealing with idolaters. The prohibition is, and again, he would say the Ram agrees with him 100%. The prohibition is only by idolaters who will bring idolatry into their homes, and they will be worshiping and doing all kinds of funky idol worship in their homes. That is how the Meiri understands this, and as you see, he says by monotheists, this just does not apply. The Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, where it's underlined, Shelo lahashiv echad mishiv amim of deyavu dazara ba'artzenu, shenemar lo yeshvu ba'artzecha, which again follows who? You should not leave. He gives both definitions. One of the seven nations, who's an idolater, which would be the same position, more or less, of the Ravid. The verse is not by all non-Jews. It's not by even all idolaters. It's by the seven nations who are idolaters. The Sefer HaChinuch in Source 11, again, you see that from the Sefer Achinuch, the prohibition of lo tichinam is the tichanim is only by somebody who is an idolater. Here, Tosfot also quotes this idea of the friendly neighbor and so on, which we can at this point skip. He also quotes, not necessarily. Let's continue. So that's part of the tension here also. Does any of this apply in Chutz La'aretz or not? So I don't want to deal with that. Source 13, Tosfot writes about renting or selling homes. He says, Yesh lefak peik ama hayu somchim b'nei adam lemkor leskir batim loved chachavim. He goes, you know, this is problematic. But by the way, let's just use right now the example in Chutz La'aretz of renting a home. You own the home. You're going to rent it to an idolater. What will he do in your home? He's going to do idolatry. That may be a problem for you. You are facilitating the idolatry being done within your home, right? By renting it to him. Okay, so that may be a problem. So he says, this is really problematic. Now, does Tosfot believe that Christianity is idolatry? So look at his conclusion towards the end here. And therefore he says, no, its only problem is when they will certainly, definitely, normatively bring idolatry into the homes. He goes, the idolaters who we live with, who is he talking about? Christians. He says they don't bring idolatry into their homes normally. Only when somebody is dead or dying. And even then, they're not really worshiping it and so on. He ends up with the conclusion, yes, it's not a problem, because the problem over here is the idolatry in the home. That is the prohibition. Let's look at the Beit Yosef. About why we let people, why we are allowed to rent to.
No.
The Tosefta or the Tosefta? I don't understand.
I forgot for a second what it is.
Oh, who Tosefta is?
Yeah.
Tosefta is it's the school
or
included. There are probably around 300, 400 people who are involved in Tosefta.
Okay.
hundreds of people over hundreds of years. Okay. I know. I know. That's why I don't want to get into this. I'd rather stay over here with our Muslims. He thought it was, again, he thought that they do bring idolatry in, but not enough to be troubled by it. Beit Yosef, in source 14. V'ha'idna nahagu, this is Rav Yosef Karo, who according to some people still has the status of the chief rabbi of Israel. Rav Yosef Karo writes in Beit Yosef, source 14, V'ha'idna nahagu lahaskir af l'dira, our custom is to rent to non-Jews, because they don't bring avodah zarah in. And what's his source? The Tosfot that we just now saw. Tosfot hirichu shem b'tama minhag, and Tosfot, you know, went into depth on why this is our practice. So over here, the Beit Yosef was pretty clear. This is what we do. We do rent to non-Jews. The Shulchan Aruch in source 15. Listen to the language. Asur litein matanat chinam lo'ved kocham she'inu makiro. You're not allowed to give a free. You're not allowed to give a present to an idolater who you don't know. What can you conclude from that? So you see right there in that formulation that the door is wide open for limitations over here of the prohibition. The Taz makes the obvious observation: she'enu makiro degam zenechlau belo techanem lo titein lehem matanot chinam. Don't give them free presents. Aval imakiro lo hava elaihu. Surely don't listen to this. Shumatana elokim makira sheri yishalem gmulo. Because he's going to pay him back, or maybe he already did already. Because there's going to be a quid pro quo, either it was before or it's coming. So once there's a relationship, he says it's not free. The problem is free, and you do something nice to somebody else, they may do something nice to you. Is that okay or no? No. The issue is not what your intention is. The issue is it something which is free? Once there's a possibility of a quid pro quo, then it's not free anymore. That's the point. It's lo chinam. Okay. Don't comment. Which all leads us now to an interesting debate. Now, among all the chatter that took place in the day or two after this letter came out, one of the things that was reported and then denied and then denied that it was reported and reported that it was denied was a statement from Rav Elyashiv. The one-liner that he used is all the people who signed, I've said for a while that they shouldn't have pens, right? Right. It's better off they didn't have a pen to sign it. A pen, yeah. They didn't have a pen. I mean, take away their pens. Take away, these people are signing on things they shouldn't be signing on. Take away their pens. Now, whether he said that or not, I do not possibly know. The other thing, and then it was denied. He says, no, he couldn't have said it. Nobody met with him, and he was doing Hanukkah. He was off. I don't know. I don't know. And then it was also quoted from him saying something else with surprise, but these were all the same people that allow the Heter Mechira. Now, that was a much cleverer statement than that. If Rav Elyashiv didn't say it, he could have said it. And that's something which I want to get into right now. When the Heter Mechira was formulated, now, the Heter Mechira, for all of you, when I say Heter Mechira, I'm talking about, obviously, at least it is to me, the Heter Mechira of the land of Israel during Shemitah. Which means the seventh year comes, they're not allowed to work the land, all kinds of people are working the land, so they came up with a solution to sell the land. So very often it's known as the Heter Mechira of Rav Kook. It's not true. It was long before Rav Kook. There was a Heter Mechira. He was the one who instituted it more than others, but Rav Kook has to defend it. In Surah 17, and Rav Kook has a whole book on this, Shemitah Haaretz, but over here, this is one of his Shelot Tshuvot, Shelochvot Mishpat Kohen, Inyanei Eretz Yisrael, and somebody challenges him on the Heter Mechira, and the reason he's challenging him is the prohibition of Lo Techanem. How are you allowed to sell the land to somebody who's not Jewish? So again, that statement, which was attributed to Rav Elyashiv, saying, I don't understand, the same people who think that the Heter Mechira is good, how can they come and say that you're not allowed to sell the land? So what did Rav Kook need to do? Did they discuss this in your... This is what's interesting, so I don't care then. This is the interesting part. So what did Rav Kook need to do in order to justify the selling of the land? So the problem is there a Torah prohibition against selling the land? So he's going to have to somehow come to a conclusion that no, there's not a... So no, he's going to have to come to a conclusion that for some reason or reasons, there's not a prohibition. Look at verse 17. V'aldat ha'arat achad mi'bei dina le'inin mechira le'goy she'esh le'karka mukudam mikodem she'esh lomo she'enu asur min ha'torah. There's one opinion that says that when can you not sell the land? What's the problem of giving him chaniyah ba'aretz? What if the guy already owns land? If he already owns land, you're not giving. Now you could tell me, hold it a second. You are strengthening his. So Rav Kook over here, and by the way, he ends up with this conclusion. He ends up, what we'll see in a second, that he says that whenever the sale of land takes place, that the Beitin should be machmir to sell it to somebody who already is a landowner in Israel, because you're not creating his being in Israel. He's already here. You're just selling the land. So that's one thing that he says, which is interesting. Right, that was the back thing of the Rambam in terms of having land connects you to the land. That the prohibition over here is turning somebody who's a temporary alien in the land to a permanent resident in the land. He goes, the people that we sell it to, they're already here. They've been here a long time. Because they own land here, ain kam shum isur Torah. There is no Torah prohibition. Ki im mitzad tosefet d'shiura, that you're giving them more. You're giving them your more. At the end, he says what I've already told you, that he thinks maybe there could be a rabbinic prohibition. And he writes at the end, v'al kopanam ru'uy l'chush l'svarazu l'chumra, d'kishe muchrichin le'nahega yidei michira l'tzarech ha'heter, yoter adif l'hadure acharei nachri kazeh, that when you sell the land, when you have to sell the land, you need to use this heter, which he did see as a heter, by the way, not as normative law. He did see it as a heter. He says you should find a non-Jew like this. Sheyishivato hi belav hachi kavua ayde mashiyesh lo karka mikvar. Find a non-Jew who already owns land, so therefore you're not causing him to be here. He is already here. I just want to skip. We'll come back to 18 in a moment. If you look at source 20, 20 was the man who took over for Rav Kook. Who's that? Rav Herzog. Rav Herzog. Uvizen nizal ki b'chol Torah kula achar rov, arov gadol b'mitzrayim kayom heim ma'aminei dat ha'islam. He's dealing with the status of Muslims. And he writes, v'ayin ma shadan kodamai hagon ha'chassid maran av mitzvah kuk. He goes, take a look at the discussion that Rav Kook had in another place. La'inyin lo techaneim sheyesh la'aravim be'etzrel din gerim toshavim. Rav Kook held, Rav Herzog seconds it, that Arabs in the land of Israel have a law of ger toshav. Afilu shalonit kablu bebeitin shel Yisrael. Now normally a ger toshav needs to go to a beitin just like a ger and says, I accept the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. And he says, and even though they never went to a beitin, v'yafal pi she'in makablin ger toshav bizman hazeh, and even though there's a law, the Rambam says we don't accept ger toshav today, shahadat notenet. What does hadat notenet mean? It's logical to conclude. Sha'uma shlema, shekibla le'a sheva mitzvot, that when you have a whole nation that has accepted upon itself seven mitzvot, v'od yoter mizeh yesh lem din kazeh le'ini lo techaneim, v'chule v'chule. So he says, therefore, that lo techaneim does not, Rav Kook and Rav Herzog both said that lo techaneim does not apply to Muslims. Why? Because as far as they are both concerned, they've accepted the sheva mitzvot in Noach. Now again, the various people who signed this thing, did they follow Rav Kook over here? Which is really what Rav Yashav was alluding to. There was somebody who attacked Rav Kook terribly on the Heter Mechira, and who's that? The Chazon Ish. And now we'll go back to source 18. And who's writing? Here we have a third chief rabbi, Rav Avadya Yosef. Hine hagon hachazon ish zatzal, he'ala, raised, sheish isur lo ta'ase min ha'torah shelo techaneim. B'mechirat karkaot eretz Yisrael l'goy. You're not allowed to sell the land to a non-Jew. Ayidei ha'rabanut ha'rashit ha'shenasu shlichim shel chakalim balei ha'karkaot. He goes, now what happens? The rabanut ha'rashit becomes the shliach, the emissary of the landowners. Kidei lahafkira mikdushat shviyit, to try to get rid of the holiness of the land. V'she'ein chiluk, sorry, they just skipped. Asher nasu shlichim chakalim, kidei lahafkira mikdushat shviyit. V'she'ein chiluk bein im yesh l'goy ha'kona karka ba'aretz olo. and he doesn't really care. But Rav Kook said whether he owns land before. Ki b'kol kakar nosaf bayit osadeh shmosrim legoy, with every additional house, land, parcel that you give to a non-Jew, harei him natnun lo chaniya b'karkazeh, you're giving them more chaniya in the land. V'siyem, and the Chazon Ish concludes, that was brilliant what the Chazon Ish just now said. That there's no such thing as a shliach l'dvar avera, which means you can't ask somebody to do a sin for you. There's no such thing as shliach l'dvar avera. So the Chazon Ish here is saying that you're not allowed to sell the land, and therefore if you give them one more morsel of land, you are strengthening their connection to the land, so therefore you break the law of lo techanein. So they are, the Beit Din, or the Rabbanut HaRashid, is the shliach of the farmer, and therefore it's shliach l'dvar aveira. Shliach l'dvar aveira doesn't work. So therefore he says the sale doesn't work. That's, there you just now saw. So now, again, go back to Rav Yashiv. And by the way, please appreciate this. Rav Yashiv is a very old man. He knows all these guys. He knew the Chazon Ish. Rav Kook was his Masadri Kedushin. Okay? I mean, He knows all these characters, and it sounds like he's almost amused over here. He says, all you guys, again, a lot of them are ultra-Zionists, including the son of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, there you want to throw another chief rabbi in over here, say, you, using the argument of lo techanein, that you're not allowed to sell or rent land or apartments, houses to Arabs, says the whole het mechira, which he's saying most of you are relying on, the whole het mechira, is following Rav Kook over here by saying that there's no prohibition. Not only that, what else did Rav Kook and Rav Herzog both say? That Muslims have a status of ger toshav in this land, which may make some of you very upset. He's, okay, one second. Political considerations. I said, you missed that part. I said, there may be political considerations I'm not getting into. All that I said that I was going to try to do is, just one second. All that I said that I tried to do is look and say, if somebody was researching this topic, could they have come to another conclusion? So if now, if you want to guess what Rav Avadia is going to do, if you go to the next paragraph, he writes, anyone have that one? Ubet mem chet kaf? No? Anybody know what that one means? I believe, yes. Very good. Uva mechilat kvodo. Excellent. Uva mechilat kvodo ga'ono. So what's he about to apologize for? Disagreeing with the Chazon Ish. Uva mechilat kvodo, he says, in the din yesh tshuva, ki mulvat she'ikar ha'yesod she'niach she'yesh kan aveira, einu muskam klau. You're saying that there's a sin over here. Who said there's a sin? Ufrat l'misha no ha'golem korakaka'ot l'goy Yishmael. So what's he going to come back and say? Excuse me. Arabs are not idolaters, and if Arabs are not idolaters, let's go back to the verse. Either, what were the two opinions we had seen? Either it's the Sheva Amamim, it's the seven nations, or it's idolaters. He goes, these are neither. Now, by the way, I've seen somebody who, by the way, I'm willing to bet signed on this thing, but I don't know because I didn't see the letter. But if he didn't sign it, the only reason he didn't sign because they didn't ask him. I'm sure he would have signed it. I once heard him give a shir, and he claimed that all the Arabs have a law of the seven nations, because the seven nations want to take the land from us, and anyone who takes the land from us is like the seven nations, and he'll claim, I mean, it's a little convoluted, but...
Who says this?
No. I've heard somebody make this claim. The person who wrote about this was actually the Nazir, Rav David Cohen. He makes this claim that that the Arabs around us today have a status of the seven nations. Rav Kook, who was his teacher, didn't seem to have that opinion. Rav Kook seemed to have the opinion that they have a law of Ger Toshav, which is a big difference. So again, the political, I understand, there are political considerations which are military, again, I agree with that completely. I'm just saying that when somebody presents the law, the Jewish law absolutely prohibits the sale, the rent of a house or an apartment to a non-Jew, right? So the sources that they'll bring, you'll note, are not necessarily as strong as you would have necessarily thought. Which means if they would say, you know what, this was, among other things, the problem I had with Meir Kahana. I'm not getting into politics, but he would get up and say, this is what Judaism says. If he would have said instead, this is my pragmatic opinion, it's one thing. But when you say, this is what Judaism says, it's something else. Now, I understand how he could defend himself. He thinks this is what Judaism says. Over here as well, if they would have said, politically, as religious leaders, we think this is what should be done, it would come out one way. If they come out and say, this is what Torah says, so what does it end up doing? It ends up causing a lot of people to ridicule Torah. That's what ends up happening. Especially when, look, do I have to convince you anymore that there may be another opinion over here in this topic? I mean, I did not work as hard as you may think in order to come out with these sources. I only started yesterday afternoon at around 3 o'clock. Okay? That would be a problem. That would be a problem. That would be a problem, at least we saw according to some of the Rishonim. Let's look at what does Rav Avadya do? Slow down. What does Rav Avadya do? First, he goes into this whole thing about non-Jews who are Muslims. Shagoyim Islam Eino of the Avodah Zarah. Sha'az Yesh Asmocha Divrei HaRajba, who we didn't look at so far. V'Hatur, who we didn't look at so far. Shebegoy She'eino Veid Avodah Zarah. Lo Shaykh Isur Lo Techaneim. V'chein Katav HaMe'iri, which we did see. Which means he's very clear in all this, that there is no prohibition when you're talking about a Muslim, and the whole prohibition of lo tichaneim does not apply to monotheists, as we had seen, certainly to Arabs. He also says something else, which really comes from Rav Kook on the next page. Rav Kook had an interesting interpretation of lo tichaneim, which we didn't see just now. Umenidan didan hu letova tayishuv pshita she'en kan isur lo tichaneim. What's the argument over here? Rav Kook claimed that lo techaneim is not a particular prohibition, but is a global prohibition. So therefore, if my selling the land in the seventh year will, as a net result, strengthen the Jewish community in Israel, then he says it can't be the prohibition of lo techaneim, which means you don't look at this in terms of the micro act, you look in terms of the macro result, which means when you have a yeshuv, and in the yeshuv, there's going to be a serious problem if no farming takes place in the seventh year, and people are going to die, and therefore people are going to pick up, and people are going to leave. So he says that actually, by allowing the heta mechira, by selling the land, it's actually going to strengthen the Jewish position over here. So therefore, he says, therefore logically, you can't have a prohibition of lo techaneim. So what ends up happening then is that the Chazon Ish sees lo techaneim in a micro level, while Rav Kook saw lo techaneim in a macro level, which led Rav Kook to the conclusion that there's no prohibition of lo techaneim here, quite the opposite. There would be a mitzvah in order to do this, what leads the Chazon Ish to a conclusion that it's usher because of lo techaneim, and therefore it's shleich l'dvar avera, and so on and so forth. So again, if you want to see Rav Avadya quoting the same position, he writes, "V'nidan didan hu l'tovat ha'yishuv pshita she'en kan isur lo techaneim u'bifrat she'mochar aminat lachzir." There's no prohibition whatsoever. I'm in the middle of page 5 on the top source. Lo titein lahem chaniya bekarka me'acha she'Yisrael osa kein letovato. We're doing it for our own good. We're not doing it for the good of the non-Jew. So you can't say that this is lo tichaneim. And he says, right, also the Aderet, who is of Cook's father-in-law, said this, and then he quotes somebody else, the Gaon from Lublin, and on and on and on he quotes it. He goes, V'dacha divrei Chazon Ish, yechmir b'zeh. And we can reject the position of the Chazon Ish. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orabach in source 19, which will look to be the last source that we do today, even though in source 21, the Tzitz Eliezer predictably goes in the same direction as Rav Avadya, also the permissive in terms of this. What's interesting is Shlomo Zalman Orabach about lo techaneim b'michira ilan orla l'nachri. Are you allowed to, if you have a tree which is orla, can you sell it to a non-Jew for the first 3 years because he can't use the fruit? An orla is asr b'hana. You're not allowed to sell the fruit. It's asr b'hana. What's the problem? Shulchan Aruch, he writes, v'shulchan Aruch yiradeh semen reish tzadi dalid, katav demutar l'mkor l'akam perut shnei orla l'gimel shanim me'ach shelo bo l'olam. You're allowed to sell the tree beforehand. This law of selling the tree of Orla is also in the land of Israel. That he quotes a Rishon over here, who actually wrote a book about the laws of Eretz Yisrael, the Kafter Beferach, who says that when it comes to renting houses or selling houses, if you don't find a buyer, and there's a non-Jew who's willing to pay, he says there's no prohibition. Why? because you're gaining from it. Tosfot also brings a similar argument along the way. What if you want to rent or sell, and a Jew's offering X amount, but the non-Jew's offering more? That's not a problem. Lo tichanim, right? You're getting something for it. So again, it's interesting. Right, what? It could be. But also, what they say, but the prohibition doesn't exist in such a case. Now, are there, just, I want to read to you the end of Rav Lichtenstein's article, which I do encourage you all to read if you're interested in the topic. He writes, you don't have it. He writes, I conclude with what should be self-evident. At stake are key questions that involve meta-halachic considerations. Okay? The willingness and ability to consider and assign appropriate weight to wide-ranging components related to halachic contents and its connection to both historical and social realities mandate a much wider discussion. We who dwell in the Beit Midrash remain committed to our belief and desire to proclaim that God is upright, my rock, in whom there is no wrong. Which means basically what bothers him is the way that the rabbis will end up looking. It bothers him. I'm telling you, he very nicely rips apart their halachic considerations over here. He goes into issues I did not bring up. I did a lot of things. The whole thing about the Hetz Mechira. Email me and I'll send you a copy of it. Okay? Rav Lichtenstein, again, he went into mainly, again, I'll read to you maybe a little bit more. Indeed, almost the entire unfolding of events that resulted from the dissemination letter was foreseeable and to a large extent obvious. The public furor, both social and ideological, the rift that is opened among the citizens of the state between camps and within camps, the op-eds in the various media outlets, the various positions often impassioned and overheated, the attack on the religious Zionist rabbinate from the right and from the left, even Torah giants, it was all foreseeable. One reads it and wonders what happened to the wisdom of those who enjoyed to consider the future ramifications. And by the way, and the answer is that I firmly believe that they were making an ideological statement and they would not back down necessarily. Only two of the people backed down from the signing of it. I did not, I believe, even though if you want you can guess, I did not, I believe, tell you what I think about the topic. All that I showed you is that if somebody wanted to give a more lenient position, they certainly could have. It's not a, and therefore, again, when I was asked about this, I said the other position is a defensible position. One could defend it. There are Rishonim that one could use to defend this. But to say that that is the only voice of Judaism on this, and this is absolute and clear, I think it's very, very far from it. If you'll ask me honestly, then honestly, that I think that this is people who were utilizing a particular position because of a political agenda, and that, I think, is always dangerous. Don't confuse politics and religion. You have a political statement to make, make your political statement. But don't drag religion into it if it's not necessary. Have a good Shabbos.